This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allows you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off your order, go to awaytravel.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew. That's awaytravel.com/Andrew. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. What the tech? What the tech? Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, my snuggle bear, Paul Thorat.
Oh, jeez.
You know, you give a very good hug. You're a very good hugger.
Sure. It's kind of an enveloping thing.
Yeah. How you been, Paul?
I'm all right.
You're all right?
I'm just unprepared. We're going away, and I'm unprepared and unready. I guess those are the same thing.
Yeah. You know, I'm having a pretty rough time also. Which we will talk about. There's a lot to talk about today, actually. Especially Microsoft stuff. Microsoft announced their hardware event, which is most likely the Surface 5. Yeah, we're going to talk about that and a couple other things. But before we do, boys and girls, I want to take a moment and talk about our new sponsor, and that's Away Travel. Paul, this goes perfectly with what you're doing. You're going to Montreal next week, correct?
I'm going to Montreal tomorrow.
Oh, you go to Montreal tomorrow, which is very stressful for you. I know you travel a lot. I travel a lot as well. And so I got contacted by this company, their new sponsor, and I looked at what they have and I was blown away. So I'm one of these people that I only travel with a carry-on, okay? I don't know. Do you actually pack your luggage? Or do you only do carry-on?
I only do carry-on.
Okay. I only do carry-on, but I don't have a carry-on bag. I literally put everything in a JanSport book bag, and I just throw it and take it with me. These guys make unbelievable varieties of luggage. They do. It comes in four different sizes, a carry-on, a bigger carry-on, a medium, and a large, and they all cost under $300. I'm going to show you guys this. So here is the luggage, Paul. Take a look at this, okay? The quality is great, and it has something on here that you are going to fall in love with. It has a USB port right here. Do you know how many times I've been at the airport, my plane has gotten delayed, or I'm waiting, or I'm early, and I've had to sit there with my phone, and my phone is starting to die, and I'm freaking out because my phone is not charged? These guys have it in here. There's a battery in here, which is unbelievable. Yep. For anybody that travels a lot, this is a huge, huge necessity. Huge. Guys, they have great, great offers there. You could charge your cell phone, your tablet, your phone, your laptop. Comes with a very nice battery on here. I'm actually traveling in a couple of weeks, and I'm really excited to take this because this makes my life so much easier. Guys, here's a great offer. Go to awaytravel.com/Andrew, and you could use a promo code Andrew to get $20 off your order. They make unbelievable premium quality. And here's the other thing. They got a 100-day free trial. You could get this 100 days. You could use it. You could see how you like it. And if it's not for you, guess what? You could return it to make your life very easy. Awaytravel.com/Andrew. I want to thank Away Travel for supporting the show. I'm very nasal.
Yes. One of these.
Huh? You want one?
Yeah.
Okay. Guys, they're probably listening to this. Can you send Paul one also?
Really you know,
Paul Thorat, this guy over here that does the show with me.
I might just buy one.
They're very good. Yeah, it's very good. So let's talk about this. By the way, I'm going to be very nasally, guys, because no, you know, we're going to try to finish that story. Let's talk about
fixed by the luggage.
Yeah, let's talk about the Surface event.
Okay,
or the Microsoft hardware event.
That's the thing. It's not. It might not be a Surface event.
Okay, very interesting. It's a Microsoft hardware event, correct?
It's not. You know, there's been some discussion around that, what it is exactly. In fact, I'm looking for my notes, but actually I hand wrote my notes. So where? Yes, here we go. So I talked to these guys about this event.
Okay.
And it's funny because they never mentioned education once. And then when the invite came out, it was like a big EDU thing. And it's like, what's going on here? So Everyone has some theories about what that might mean and all that kind of stuff. But the question, and I think to the point you were just saying, is what is this event, right? And so I was told that it would be very much in the theme of the October event, where they announced the Creators Edition for Windows 10.
Okay.
And then some Surface hardware, right? Surface Studio, Surface Book with performance.
Yes, but here's the thing, though. There's a lot happening at this point for them, right? They have the Creator version, Creator's version coming out. Mm-hmm. What's the release date on that?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. 2 days ago. It's 2 days ago. But I mean, the rollout has started, right? It's not boom here in one shot. So that's, you know, this month, essentially. Mm-hmm. They have Scorpio, which will be unveiled at E3. Right?
Yes, right. So that's been taken out of consideration for the May event.
Okay,
right?
So that's out of the May event.
That was a long shot, but it was
So part of it. This next version of Windows 10 is probably, they're going to concentrate on that. They're going to talk about creators a little bit. They're going to talk about, you know, how the rollout has gone, because they're giving themselves almost a month here. And then this education thing, I'm curious as to what this is.
Yeah, so the prevailing theory, and I think it's a good one, is that Microsoft will announce Windows 10 Cloud at this event. Windows 10 Cloud is widely and incorrectly seen as a Chromebook competitor. It's actually much more than that. But that said, it's fair to say that Windows 10 Cloud running on what we might call cloud books could pose a challenge to Chromebooks in education, which might explain the EDU thing. And Chromebooks are now the number one device in the United States in the education market. So it makes sense that Microsoft would go after them.
So Microsoft is going to have partners for this. They're not going to go and make their own.
Yes. So I did not come up with that one myself, but Brad mentioned to me today, and I think he might have been talking to Mary Jo, this notion that, you know, maybe this isn't a Surface event at all. Maybe Microsoft will go to market with multiple devices from different companies. And that, it's interesting, because that corresponds with something I was told back in January, which is at the heart of my statement that cloud is not just about low-end devices. It makes sense that they would do that. That's how the PC industry works. It's how they did netbooks before. It's, you know, Microsoft partners. That's the way they do things. But it raises a question. If Microsoft goes to this event and has partners on stage like HP and Dell and Lenovo, whoever else, and they're all making what we're going to call cloud books for now.
They're also making Chromebooks.
Well, they're also making Chromebooks. They're also making mixed reality headsets, right? The Windows mixed reality thing. And that could factor into the education thing. I think that's going to be part of it.
Yeah.
But the big question is then, okay, fine, that all makes sense. What, if any, hardware will Microsoft announce at the event, right? Will there be a Surface device? We were told explicitly that there will not be a Surface Pro refresh at this event. There's not going to be a Surface Phone event. Obviously, that's ridiculous. Yeah. But Satya Nadella is going to be there. He doesn't go to just every event. It's something strategic if he's there. I think that's the educational part. And I honestly think there's going to be a bigger push in education than just these stupid devices, frankly. I don't think that Windows 10 Cloud has legs. I don't think anyone wants a system that only runs UWP apps.
Well, we kind of saw what happened with that with Windows RT, right?
I don't think he's there for that. I think he's there because Microsoft has a mobile device management solution for education. And I think there are going to be other cloud initiatives for education that we don't know about yet. And I think that's what that push is.
So, but I mean, you know how I could see this working for them? If during this announcement, they also, I mean, obviously, I don't think they're going to make like a Surface education, you know? I don't think that's what we're going to get, right? We're going to get probably HP as a partner and Dell as a partner, and they're going to combine for this, you know, this cloud book, let's call it that, this cloud book thing. But I think the important thing here is with the UWP apps, if you are going to push this as the education platform, you need software partners. Real serious software partners to work with you and say, you know what, this is a great way for us to push the universal app platform, which has been terrible.
By the way, or, you know, that came up on Twitter today. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
But it's an interesting point. You know, somebody on Twitter mentioned to me, maybe this is some big UWP push. And I said, yeah, maybe, but you know, what about the apps? I mean, the apps have never materialized. But you know what? the apps have never materialized on Chromebook either, right?
They're going to rely on Android.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a web app thing happening out there in the world, and a lot of what people do on Chromebooks is probably web-based. Chromebooks are big in education, so I would imagine that a lot of the solutions they're accessing via Chromebooks are web-based, right? Well, and any Android apps, like you said, but I think everyone who has tried Android apps on a tablet, or if you're lucky enough to have gotten it on a Chromebook, will agree that the Android situation on big screens is not great.
No, not good at all.
Android seems to work well enough on a phone, but for some reason it hasn't made the transition to bigger screens very well.
Well, I'll tell you something though, Paul. I mean, even some apps for the iOS, right? When you're talking about the screen size, some of them don't really convert well for that large iPad.
Sure, but there are many more iPad apps than there
are. Oh, tremendous. Android apps.
But the point was, if you accept everything I just said as truth or a good point at least, but you might not agree with it 100%. You know, I guess it's fair to make the argument that a cloud book, right, a PC running Windows 10 cloud, is no less viable than a Chromebook, right? I mean, they'll both run web apps. That's no problem. Whether there are more Android apps that run well as a tablet on a tablet sized screen than there are UWP apps, I guess is open to debate, but I think you could at least make the argument that they're kind of close. So actually, why not go with the one that will bring you full Office from Microsoft, right? Why not go with the one that has a mixed reality solution coming down the pike any day now that will enable labs and classrooms where kids can go in there, put on the headset, and do mixed reality experiences? I mean, it's not far-fetched. It's not
it's not far-fetched at all.
You know what I mean? Just being pragmatic about it, or just being, I don't know, logical about it, it's not a complete non-starter.
I'm curious as to what this announcement is. This is very interesting. Considering there's multiple things. I think the benefit here is not necessarily the operating system or the hardware. I think the benefit is getting in that education market and also building that UWP store.
Well, that's the thing. Will that happen? And I think it was Mary Jo who kind of said, you know, it's possible that the future of UWP is something very different than what they originally envisioned, which was a very traditional now mobile platform that was just a certain thing, sandboxed apps, you know, written to this new API, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of expanded over time, right? Now we have desktop apps that run inside of a container that are pseudo UWP apps. We're allowing developers to port things from other platforms. There's the Xamarin thing going on, and it's kind of evolving. And so I think it's fair to say that UWP, as Microsoft has envisioned it, has not succeeded in any way, shape, or form.
So but, Chris in our chat room brings up something interesting, right? And this is going to play a major play as far as if this is successful, not in education. Schools would rather spend less money for something Android-based if Microsoft is more expensive. You know, if they're putting out a product that's a little more. They're looking at bottom line stuff, right? Because essentially you could get all... What are they using? Everything, like you said, it's web-based. All the applications are universal. This is going to be more of a... Are we going to be competitive with the pricing? And how much market share can we grab from people here to keep them in our umbrella?
How worth it is it, right, to lowball on a price? And Microsoft
and how low can they go?
Yeah. Well, by the way, they can go pretty low because they've gone free before. And then as it turns out, there are prices below free, and those prices are called incentives. You know, so we kind of talked through this on Windows Weekly yesterday, but you could imagine a situation where, you know, you roll out 50 cloud books and you get 10 mixed reality headsets for free or something like that. So, you know, they've done this on an individual basis before. They've done it with netbooks, right? They invented a new version of Windows called Starter, which, by the way, when they invented it, Windows Vista was out, but they had to go with Windows XP for Starter Edition because netbooks had such low system resources they couldn't even run Vista. And then that changed over time. And then netbooks, you know, went away. But what they were competing with at that time was free, right? It was Linux. And they did everything they could to prevent that from succeeding, and it worked, right? They did that worked. Now, Chromebooks, I don't know what's kind of taken them so long, but Chromebooks in the United States have seen big inroads in education. It's the number one computing platform now. And they're starting to see inroads in business, according to IDC. Apparently, Chromebooks are enormous growth in businesses in the United States only in the first quarter of this year. Now, granted, when you start from zero, big growth is very easy. It could be very small numbers.
So, what changed for them in that sense for business? Is it that they took an initiative with business with enterprise, or just that it was such a small number that a couple people just signed on to use Chromebooks, and now the market kind of changed for them?
So I'm going to speculate here, and we'll just say that the story is unfolding. But here's what I think. I think what that really represents is some pushback against Windows 10, and that businesses are not super interested in updating it. The speed at which Microsoft requires. And what they're starting to do is look at systems for certain classes of users that maybe have smaller needs or less needs or whatever. And will this work for them? Right?
Yeah.
Line of business apps, which are kind of, which you might consider like in-house on, used to be on-premises proprietary applications created by businesses back in the 90s or whatever, are not being ported or not being changed to UWP today, they're being changed to web apps. And those web apps will run on anything.
They'll run on a Chromebook.
Yeah. And so I think, and that's the problem Microsoft faces, right? It's part of the problem with UWP. It just doesn't solve a problem that anyone's really having. It solves problems, but in the real world, it just doesn't address the need. And I think that's the central issue there. So.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Them entering that market. Now, if we do get a Surface,
right?
Surface Pro 5.
Well, no. So I was told explicitly no Surface Pro. There are two.
Oh,
things,
no Surface though, Pro.
Yeah. Though the so previous to knowing that, I had written an article about the possibility of a Surface Pro 5 or Surface Pro 4 or refresh or whatever. And what I said at the time or wrote at the time was that what Microsoft could do is introduce a low-end Y-series processor-based version of the Surface Pro. No pen, no type pad, type cover, which you'd have to buy separately if you wanted it. Put it in the same price range as Surface 3 used to be and have it run Windows 10 Cloud, right? And by the way, they still may do that. In fact, one of the big theories now, which is bolstered somewhat by not my source, but someone else's source, someone who contacted me today who I do trust, is that Microsoft is in fact planning another event sometime between May and June for Surface, right? That the reason we're not seeing Surface Pro here or a Surface Book clamshell, which is one of the rumors, or a Surface Book refresh or whatever, is that that's coming later. Wait,
Surface Book clamshell.
Yeah, Digitimes had a rumor a couple of weeks ago that because Surface Book has not sold very well, it's very expensive. It's also mechanically unreliable because of the detachable screen. It's a source of a lot of problems that they're looking at doing a refresh of that where the screen doesn't detach. It's just a laptop.
How often do you use yours with the screen detached? Is it never?
Never. Yeah. Nope. Never. In fact, that was my first reaction to that device when they first announced it, which was nobody was asking for this. Nobody wants that. And I don't mean nobody literally. Please don't.
I know.
I know you know, but I mean, but people listening. Sorry, I always skip.
Paul, my friend wants one.
If you were to go back in time to September, October 2015, what people were asking for was a Surface Ultrabook. In other words, what they wanted was a MacBook Air.
Yeah.
By Surface, thin and light and wonderful. What they got was this clunky, heavy thing, which is nice in its own right, by the way. It's a beautiful machine. It's got that weird teardrop hole when you close the lid because it can't close flat because and of course it can't go back all the way because all the guts are in the screen, so it's top heavy. And they introduced a bunch of problems to support a usage scenario that I think impacts the lowest possible single digit percentage of users. And then of course the thing costs $1,500 and up, I think up to past $3,000. So it also hasn't sold very well because most people don't have that much money to spend on a computer.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll find out. You're going to be in New York, right?
Yeah. Oh, Andrew, speaking of which.
Yes.
So this event is May 2nd, which is a Tuesday.
It is a Tuesday.
Because it starts so early in the morning, I'm actually going to stay in New York the night before, and we are going to have a meetup at Rattle and Hum on Monday night.
Oh, that's perfect. So I would just come right after work.
Yeah. So I don't remember the exact timing of it, but it's Monday, May 1st.
Monday, May 1st. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll stay in New York the night before. I don't usually do that, as you know, but I'm going to.
Cool. I'll be around.
I'll do it this time.
We'll do something fun. Excellent. Guys, we do have a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about Microsoft and Android. A match made in heaven, Paul? Quite possibly. This is very interesting. And we started last week on this, and it's kind of grown and continued on. But before we do, let's talk about our sponsor, and that's FreshBooks. I run my own business. I know a lot of people that run their own business, and I have to tell you, it is a total pain in the butt to be on top of who paid you, who owes you money, who do you have to pay. It becomes very, very confusing and almost unmanageable if you're not on top of this. But here's a great thing about these guys. FreshBooks has a unbelievable way to manage this. They have a beautiful, clean interface. I've been using FreshBooks probably since, let me think here. I have the date here. Let me see where it is. I have the date right here. Probably 2012, sometime in 2011, I started using FreshBooks, and it made my billing, my invoicing super easy. So they have the dashboard, they have the support, they have an expense management service, they have a mobile time tracking. They are all around. You can get this on all your platforms, obviously. But the cool thing is, when you do your invoicing, they make it hassle-free, super easy, and you can set up reminders. You could also see where you're spending your money, who's paying you, who's not paying you on time, who maybe needs a little bit more attention. They do a great job at this. They've been doing this forever, and it's super easy invoicing. You could also do customized invoicing, things like that. They have a great thing. You get a 30-day free trial by going to FreshBooks.com/WTT, and you could enter in also the What the Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Give them a try. If you run your own business, if you do a lot of freelance work, which almost every single one of my friends do freelancing now, you could go ahead and try them out. Over 10 million people felt exactly the same way about invoicing as I did until they discovered FreshBooks. They have a great, great platform. FreshBooks.com/WTT. I want to thank them for supporting the show. All right, Paul, you wrote a very nice post. There was an article on Therat, and it's Microsoft plus Android equals it's time. Now, this has been a very, we touched on this last week, but there's been, the ball has been rolling on this. We started seeing more and more applications on Android, and a lot of people said this was a terrible idea that Microsoft was, you know, what they were doing. But it seems like this is now going to be possibly the future of Microsoft as far as phones go.
Well, it's a thought. You know, I mean,
I mean, they're selling them. They're selling them in the store, right? You could buy a Samsung.
Yeah. All right. So for the first time, they're going to be selling through their own retail stores, which is a fairly limited distribution thing, right? Galaxy phones. And they'll be doing a Microsoft Concierge thing where they put some Microsoft stuff on there. That's cute. You know what I mean? It's almost, a little bit more of a statement than anything else, right?
to who? Windows phone users saying, hey, guys.
No. I don't mean it like that. I mean, you don't start selling a major new product out of your retail store to send a message to fans. That's negative. You know, like that's, I don't mean it like that. They've failed in mobile, right? There's no way around that. They gave up 2 years ago. They gave up. So it's almost 2 years ago now. And, you know, they've been plotting what they've said to me is kind of like the next thing, right? In other words, we missed this wave. We're never going to compete. We're looking at the next thing. And I know there are people holding out for some kind of a Windows phone, Surface phone, but whatever. But that's silly, right? So this is a two-horse race. It's Android and iOS. It's increasingly Android. And the beautiful thing about Android is that Android is open, and it allows you to replace everything. You can replace the home screen. You can replace the lock screen. You can replace the assistant. You can, you know, it's really neat. And that's, I think, the opening that Microsoft has. But the important thing, the way to think about it is like this. You know, Microsoft is this giant company, right? And you can dice it up by revenue or however you want to sort of ascertain what parts of Microsoft are really big and what parts of Microsoft are the most important. And when you get to things like phones, right? Even if phones even if they still made phones and they still sold like 10 million or 20 million of, units of those a quarter, or if you look at something like Surface, or by the way, Xbox hardware, you know, what little percentage of Microsoft are those businesses? They're tiny little tiny percentages. When Windows was going gangbusters, Windows at one time was something like 33% of Microsoft's revenues. Those revenues all came from partners who were selling PCs and were paying Microsoft for the software, right? And then some tiny part of it was people who just bought Windows at retail, which is very...
small amount of people that did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why would this phone business matter? Like, why would you even bother? Like, what's the hope here? Like, what's the dream, right? It's never going to be a big percentage of Microsoft's overall revenues ever. Doesn't matter. Even if Microsoft became the number three Android, you know, device maker in the world, it's never going to be a big chunk of it. My point, though, is that's not what this is about. Microsoft's future is in cloud services, right? And the cloud services that Microsoft is selling are things like Azure, obviously, which are real back-end services, kind of infrastructure type services that, you know, businesses would use or whatever. But also things like Office 365, OneDrive, consumer and business, you know, OneNote and all of the stuff that they have. And that stuff needs to work everywhere, right? And so everywhere today means on the web, it means on popular mobile platforms, Android and iOS. It means on Windows. Windows is still hundreds of millions of whatever, you know, of unit out there. It means Chromebooks and things like that. Sorry, every single device in my office is trilling about this meeting. I have 30 minutes.
You got 30 minutes, Paul. Hurry up.
I saw my face go white. Yeah. That was getting distracted by Google Calendar. So I think the point of Microsoft doing their own devices, like if Microsoft could take Android and put out a Microsoft version of Android, right? It's not going to eat into anything. It's not going to threaten Google. It's not going to threaten iPhone. But it does provide a place for those fans who want the Microsoft experience. It does provide a thing that Microsoft can bring on stage when they go to shows that they can, their employees can carry around, that their enthusiasts can bring with them and share with other people and show people how awesome it can be when you have this curated Microsoft experience. The underlying platform shouldn't matter. In other words, like the Windows Phone part of it or the Windows 10 part of it would have been this, even if succeeded. But the cloud stuff is this. And that's what those devices are for.
Yeah.
Show what it looks like when it all works. When you have your own platform, it's easy to do that. But when nobody uses that platform, it's kind of beside the point.
Sure.
And so anyone could install Microsoft apps on a phone. Anyone could connect to Microsoft services on a phone. Anyone could figure out how to replace the lock screen and the home screen and the assistant and the keyboard and whatever else you can do, all the goofy stuff you can do on Android. Yes, anyone could. But Microsoft could just sell the thing. Just,
yeah, absolutely.
Here it is. This is a Microsoft phone. It's not about unit sales. That business would be in promotion of the broader thing. And by the way, it's also the thing that could make Universal Windows Platform apps successful, because the goal here should be to get Universal apps, Universal Windows Platform apps on Android, right? Again,
would they do that though? How would that?
Well, let's not worry about the how, because actually I think that work has already occurred. They have Xamarin and
technology
to make that happen. The way to think of it is like this, like, well, okay, for example, before there was Universal Windows Platform, right? The core platform, the core underlying platform that Microsoft had and still has, by the way, was called .NET. And .NET was proprietary to Windows. And so the .NET framework and the .NET runtime was something that only ran on Windows. It was kind of a platform-limited version of Java, right? Java was cross-platform, and it suffered from performance issues and so forth because of that. But .NET was always – it was just Windows. That's all it was. It was just the new Windows API. Today, they're replacing .NET with something called .NET Core. And .NET Core runs cross-platform. It runs on Linux. It runs on Mac OS 10 or Mac OS now. And it runs on Windows, you know, and they're rejiggering it in various ways too. There's other changes, but the point of this thing is that they're making .NET what it should be, a cross-platform compatible platform. That's what they should do to Universal Windows Platform, which, by the way, runs on top of .NET. In other words, it doesn't matter the technical aspect of it. Don't worry about that. The point is, you want to go to a developer show like Build, which is happening in a few weeks. Stand up in front of all these guys, the tens of millions of people who have stood by you all these years and adopted every stupid database framework you've ever made, every stupid, you know, .NET based whatever framework that you've made, APIs and so forth, and give them the thing that you always want to give them, which is a bigger opportunity. You know, they've stood up in the past and they've said, we have 400 million people on Windows 10. That's a huge opportunity. Our goal is to get to 1 billion users. That's a huge opportunity, right? Those things are real, right? But if they could stand up and say, we're also going to give you 2.5 billion or whatever the number is, Android users, and you just get it for free, right? Like today, for example, when you compile an app in a universal Windows platform app in Visual Studio, you can target a phone and the PC and other devices, but let's just focus on those two. The ability to target a Windows phone today as a developer gives you zero.
Almost
no
nothing,
benefit to that at all. There's nothing. You are just wait. The fact that this thing can run in a little form factor is a technical achievement and it's interesting. You're not going to make a dollar from that. That's a waste of time and money.
Yeah.
But if that thing was Android, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, it's humongous.
That's why. That's why you do it. Yeah. And that's what the point of that article was. Yeah, it was inspired by the fact that Build is happening soon and I'm thinking about Build.
Yeah, this is what we will probably get out of it. I mean,
yeah.
So this will go into something else. But before I say that, as far as consumers go, the consumer line, is this, I mean, I know that this wasn't their end goal to kind of work with Android and then to kind of put everything on there. But they've had to do it because Android's so dominant and there is services business. They're not really hardware. They're not going to make money on Windows phone hardware. They're going to make money on the services that they're offering, like Office and things like that. How different of a vision path is this now from compared to 2 years ago? Tremendous, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean,
it's a thing. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm very curious this year what they present, you know, what Microsoft presents. Like I've had some interesting run-ins in the past with Microsoft with regards to Android. Actually, I think it was 2 years ago, I had got caught in wind of some Android work. And of course, at the time you think, well, they're bringing Android apps to Windows Phone, which by the way, they were. What I'm describing is kind of the opposite of that, right? Because if you think back a couple of years, they actually got Android apps running on Windows. They ran really well. In fact, on ARM-based Windows devices, phones, Android apps ran natively. They ran at full speed. They were great.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem for our platform, the Windows platform, because that means developers no longer have to write to Universal Windows platform. They can just write to Android. It will work on both. Why bother? You know? They killed it for that reason, by the way. It was too good. It's kind of a messed up thing to say.
Yeah.
That's a fact. So from sort of a gut feeling perspective, I don't feel like they can do anything to make Universal Windows platform successful, to be honest.
Even on Windows.
Yeah, period.
Even on desktop.
Microsoft is not sharing this data. I it's funny, when Windows 8 came out, I got a lot of this data from a good source of mine, and I haven't seen anything like this in a few years now, but I'll without actually being able to literally guarantee it, I will say, just as an overstatement, like people do, I guarantee you that if you had access to the data that Microsoft does, what you would discover is that people run the exact same applications on Windows 10 that they run on Windows 7. That there are little minor blips for a couple of the built-in apps, like maybe the people use the mail app to some percentage, maybe, you know, weather runs sometimes. But I just don't think it hasn't mattered. And it is literally a fact that Microsoft hasn't made a popular developer platform since before they started talking about Longhorn. And I don't know if, I don't think it's really tied to Longhorn. I think there were a number of factors that changed, but let's just say Longhorn's lengthy gestation and the disaster that was Windows Vista coincided very nicely with such things as the Microsoft antitrust trials that kept them distracted.
Yeah, it changed a lot for them.
Yeah, the rise of Google and Apple, the rise of web apps, which are only now really maturing into full-featured, you know, native app-like experiences, and the rise of mobile, of course, starting with the iPhone. And so during that entire, let's call it a 10-year time frame, it wasn't exactly 10 years, but 10 years, no, let's say that decade, it was just a confluence of bad timing for Microsoft. And so we've emerged on the other side of it. And I know there are proponents of UWP. I think it's a great idea. Technically, I think it's an excellent idea. But I also know, just being honest about it, that it just has not taken off in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and most likely will not.
I don't think it's ever going to.
Yeah.
Never.
I want to talk to you about Android, but before we do, let's take a moment and talk about our sponsor, and that's Casper. Paul sleeps on a Casper mattress. I sleep on a Casper mattress, and you should also sleep on a Casper. My mother-in-law just bought a Casper mattress and says it's the best thing that she's gotten. She made the mistake, Paul, of ordering one of those knockoffs, like a Casper knockoff.
Oh, jeez.
And it was like the same price, too. They're knockoffs, and it was terrible. She had a terrible, terrible experience. She returned it and ended up getting a Casper. You could save $50 additional towards your mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew at checkout. They have a multitude of products now. It's amazing how much this company's grown. If I could pull this up here. They have an unbelievable lineup. They have all different size mattresses. They also even have bedding, which is great. They have mattress covers. You could buy the foundation from them. You could buy the pillows, the sheets, everything. They're a one-stop shop and extremely affordable. Go to Casper.com/Andrew. Get $50 towards your mattress purchase. I want to thank Casper for supporting What the Tech and, of course, the GFK Network. Well, let's talk about your Android usage. So you're using more Android, and I'm using less Android. I'm almost at the point of abandoning Android.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm so tired of stuff not working, you know? This is the first time that I'm actually using an iPhone and an Android phone together, and they're both compatible. You know, they're both the same level, I guess. They're both features. They're all both new.
Oh, that's right. What did you get? You get a plus or a regular?
I got a plus. Yeah, from my job.
What I've known now for a while, which is that when things work, it's kind of nice.
things work, it's really nice, especially when, you know, like I use every day. I use the MTA app, for example, right? And this is not an Android problem. Maybe this is an application problem. But my application will crash.
Andrew, to be fair, I mean, I'm not even sure what you're about to say, but I actually think what you're describing is an Android
problem. It's quite possible it is.
What I mean by that is I have found that apps that exist on both platforms, the iOS version is almost always better.
Oh my God. It's night and day, actually.
Yeah.
That's how much better it is.
Yeah. I think you're discovering what I've seen as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I've never really used them together like this, but I'm using both almost around the same time, you know, and mm-hmm. I try to be fair about it. Even Skype on iOS is better than Android. I mean, it's all my applications. I don't know. This could be a number of things. This phone is a year old, and I just got this phone, so it could be a number of things. But I'm starting to come to the realization that, iOS is a much better platform than Android when it comes to just having things work for you.
I just want to say, it's very important that you hear this. Yeah. I told you so.
You did tell me so. You did. With that said, what has your experience been?
Well, I mean, my experience with Android overall has been on the negative side, but including, by the way, with the $800 or $900 Pixel XL that I bought last year, which is a lackluster device by almost any measure. I know that much of the world disagrees with me on that. In fact, routinely, I see that the Pixel is voted like the very best Android phone there is. In which case,
why
that market is doomed because it's terrible. And it's funny. I should always asterisk that comment because there have been the occasional Android device over the years that have been pretty great. Like the original Nexus 5 was great.
The original Nexus was great. The original Nexus. I mean, going back even further.
I've never used that one. The first and second generation Nexus 7 tablets were great. They were great devices. Everything else that anyone has ever made is a piece of crap. No. The Nexus 6P that I had, and the Nexus 5X were great. Those have a little bit of an asterisk. I would say the camera on the Nexus 6P is probably the best camera I've ever had in a smartphone.
On the 6P? Really? Really?
A little slow.
Okay.
But it was the picture quality is fantastic. And all those night pictures I took of Paris last summer, that was Nexus 6P. It was it's just wonderful. So the Pixel's been hard on me. A, because I don't like it. And B, because it's so expensive. And I think this is the thing that's been stuck in the back of my craw, if that's a thing. And of course, I review a lot of laptops as well. Not to get too far off onto a sidetrack, but if HP or Dell or Microsoft, whoever wants me to review a laptop, they always send me like the $3,000 awesome, really expensive one.
Yeah, so your review is going to be quite positive because it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's great.
You know, from I don't know, it's not just a credibility thing or whatever, but from just personally, I would never spend that much money on a laptop of any kind ever. I just wouldn't ever, and I never have. I mean, and I write for a living, and I need a good keyboard and a good screen, and I use a computer professionally every single day. I would never spend that much money ever on a computer. And so it's been a little bit of a moral issue for me or whatever. And but the Pixel falls into this category too. It's too expensive. I felt like I had to get it because it was the new Google thing. They make the platform. I want to see what's going on. It's open and it's unlocked and it's going to get all the updates and all the right reasons, you know, for getting this thing. But I hate this phone. You know, I'm really disappointed in it. And so to me, it's a double whammy. It's the price and the fact that it's not any good for the price, you know, that the Nexus phones, for example, were at least the Nexus 5, they skipped a gen. Nexus 6 was terrible, but the 5X and the 6P were great. And the thing that the 5, the 5X and the 6P all had in common, aside from the fact that they were great, is that they were great values. They were 2/3 the cost of a flagship phone or less and offered all the same functionality, same processors, same features, better cameras. And I really, you know, as a reviewer, but as a technology enthusiast, as a human being, I really like those things that hit that sweet spot of value.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to, you know, to recommend something to people that isn't terrible in some way. In other words, if the Pixel was truly the greatest Android phone ever made, let's just pretend that it is. And to some people, I guess it is. I don't see it, but you know, whatever. Okay, fine. Let's just pretend it is. You would still have to have the conversation where you said, look, this is the greatest Android phone in the world, but it's really expensive, you know? And it's really expensive because, well, it's really expensive because it's really expensive, but they also do that pricing thing like Apple does, right? The base model, which is the one I bought, 32 gigs, it's not expandable. That is not enough storage. You have to get the 128 gig one. Well, that's $100 more or whatever the price differential is. I think it's $100. It's a really expensive phone. And I'm sorry, I just have a problem with that. And so I decided that since I don't like Android anyway, and since I'm having such a bad experience with this Pixel phone, well, let's just, let me replace it. I mean, let me get something that, I keep hearing about these other devices that are like the Nexus.
Yeah.
So there were two. One is the Moto G5 Plus, which is $225, depending on configuration. Low-end device, right? And then a mid-tier device, the OnePlus 3T, which is the, you know, the late 2016 midstream upgrade to the OnePlus 3, which I think came out like say mid-year last year.
Yeah.
My point is at the mid-tier there's a OnePlus 3T. It's about $400. It appears to offer roughly the same specs as you'd get on a Pixel. It's a lot less money. You know, does it measure up?
Yeah.
Interesting thing for me is it does for the most part. It exceeds the Pixel in many ways. It falls short in the camera department. There's no doubt about it. In fact, I took pictures of the HP laptop today with that device. They're not very good, actually.
Okay. So do you have them posted at all? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, I posted some photos. Like, if you look at the day two review I did, okay. I have some night shots, and that's only night shots. But as far as just general photos, not outdoors in perfect sunlight when any camera can take a good photo, but these pictures were taken indoors with some lighting in the room, and they're not
okay. Great. So Pixel XL, and then the Pixel, and then the T3. So the T3 is a little bit more orangey.
No, it's more like The way that these night shot pictures work is you focus on the one little part of light that's in the scene, right? And if you looked at those photos I took last summer, or if you look at the photos I took in Germany at night, which was the Pixel, by the way, they come out stunning. They're beautiful. With the OnePlus 3T, when you focus on the light, what you get is a light blob. It's just a blob of light. And so they're not terrible. They're just not as good as the best you know, that's available. That's
all. Yeah.
But as far as value goes, yeah, I think I can say I'm only like 2 days into this, but I mean, it's very clear that this thing is the value proposition that the Nexus used to be. There's no doubt about it. This is it. This is what I'm talking about. But you raised that thing about the one app. That's the other thing. Now, with the understanding that Android has always betrayed me in the end, like Android is Android, right? I feel like at some point this thing will start slowing down, or it will do what Android does. It will always, you know, Android's terrible, but so far it hasn't done that. I mean, it's brand new. But it also hasn't annoyed me with the little things. And I think it's the little things. Like when you go to do something like, I want to use Edge because it's the new browser, and I, you know, and then you start actually using it and you have like one little problem and you're like, well, okay, that's not good. It doesn't work the same way that Chrome does. I don't like it. And then you have another little problem. And you're like, and then over time, it's the little things. It just adds up. And eventually you're like, you know what? Screw this thing. I can't do it anymore. That's what the Pixel's like. Yeah. That's not what's happened on this one. And it's interesting. I actually have examples of the same app running on this phone. And so, I don't know if it, like, for example, I wrote about this, the Duolingo app, for example. I can never get it to work well on Android. I hate it. I actually asked my wife one time because she uses it every day. How do you use the microphone on this thing? It never works correctly. And she's, you know, she has a Samsung, whatever. And she's like, I've never had a problem with it. And I've had a problem. I had a problem with it on the Nexus. It was terrible in the Nexus as well. I put it on here. And so yesterday when I did Duolingo, I said, well, I'll try to use it. I know it's going to suck and I'll do one lesson and I'll hate myself for it and I'll just move on. But the microphone worked perfectly. It worked like it does on iPhone or on iOS. And that's like a little, I know it's one example. It's the smallest thing in the world, except that's something I literally do every single day. And so if I leave the house with the phone and I could be up the street in Dedham Square, or I could be across the country in Seattle, or I could be in another country and I'm going to do Duolingo because I do it every single day. The fact that that thing just works, that's actually
huge. It's excellent. Yeah, of course. It's
huge.
Of course.
It's early days. I don't want to get crazy here, but I will say, like, if this thing was as terrible as the Pixel for me, it's still a better deal because it only costs $400. That's half the price of the, well, actually this one was probably $475. I bought the more expensive one because this thing too doesn't have non-expandable storage. So I got the 128. Anyway,
what do you think of the operating system, the Oxygen OS?
So it is the lightest of skins on Android I've ever seen, right? And so the original version shipped with Marshmallow, the Android M, right, which is a little weird, like an older version. But honestly, mostly subtle differences. I upgraded it to N. They have their own themes and icon sets and things that. And I actually changed it to use kind of a OnePlus icon set. I've stuck with the OnePlus launcher. I didn't change to the Google launcher. And from a home screen perspective, I find it to be very attractive. It seems lightweight, you know, in the sense that like it seems faster, you know, there's no way to really know. The performance is great. I would say you're always in Android. You're always looking for that. What I think of as performance unreliability, that moment of lag that you click.
I know exactly what you mean. It
doesn't quite come up, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
The only time that ever happens, and honestly, this is something I don't think that would impact people day to day, is when I take a screenshot. And it may literally be a feature. So if you ever take a screenshot in Android, you know, you hold down two of the buttons and it makes a camera sound. And the screen kind of pops up. You see the picture.
And then it lags it?
And right there, it lags it. Right. Yeah. So it almost seems like it's there for a second too long. Like it comes up and you're like, oh, it crashed. And then it goes away.
I actually had that happen on my Galaxy. And whenever I do it, it kind of lags it, and the actual screenshot is the transition.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
right.
Ridiculous.
So that's an Android thing, then, is what I'm thinking. Yeah. But you know, I someone asked me like, well, how's the camera performance? Right, you hit the camera app comes right up. You hit the take a button, you know, the take a picture button, whatever. You know, it's like click, 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 click. It's fast. You know, now the pictures aren't
great.
The pictures are very good, I think is how I would say it. I'm so used to like really superior smartphone pictures, except for one thing, right? The other disappointment of the past year for me has been the picture quality of the iPhone 7 Plus. And I'm curious to see what you think about that because you had or have still a Samsung Galaxy.
Yeah,
7,
it depends. So here's the thing. It depends, right? Because it depends on the environment. I actually use both cameras because certain environments, this is a lot better in. Like that photo I took yesterday of that shoot that we were doing. I don't know if you saw that.
I did, yeah.
Okay. So that I took with the iPhone, and it did a much better picture. It was smarter to determine the white balance and the coloring. And it has a little bit more depth than the Samsung because of extra light that was in the room. The Samsung performed better for me under low light, and this performed better under like a really high light.
The iPhone 7 is a step back for low light photography, unfortunately. Yeah. Like the 6 and 6S were great low light. What I wish for the iPhone is that they would have an HDR always on, that you can't put HDR on all the time. You can't leave it on.
Yeah, I would.
I don't know why. And to give Google some credit, because I keep complaining about the Pixel, the Pixel camera is fantastic. And you just leave that thing on auto everything, including auto HDR, and it's awesome. That's the reason you use this phone. The camera is incredible. And so that remains a fact. I mean, but, you know, is it $300 to $400 more incredible? Probably not for most people. Probably
not.
You know?
Not for 90% of people, yeah.
And by the way, for that price, buy a digital camera. you know, if you want to take pictures on a trip.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm curious to see how your journey goes with this. And you're getting the S8, right?
Yeah. So
that I'm very interested in.
Yeah. So the reason this is notable to me is that I usually very quickly identify problem areas in a device like this. There's always something, especially with Android. It's very quick, you know, usually for me. And I installed all the apps. I signed into everything. I started to switch things over. I documented all this in the articles. But there was never a moment where I was like, yep, there it is, except for that screenshot thing. But screenshots into something, I'm doing this as a living. I mean, I'm writing about it. So, of course, I'm taking screenshots. But most people don't, you know, whatever, screenshots. But I'm not going to ding them for that. I've been, you know, given my general ambivalence / hostility towards Android, I've been really happy with this thing.
I've only had it. I'm curious to see like long-term usage, but I'm more curious about the Samsung and what you feel about that, because that is a real flagship, right? Yes. That's like a real deal flagship device. And if that meets your expectations.
So it has the same camera that you have in your device. The software, I guess, has been improved. If that thing takes photos as good as your S7, which it should, right? That to me would be a big deal. But again, it's like a $900 phone. I mean, I don't know. If the OnePlus 3T works out, and I've got a Moto G coming as well, the G Plus, I could picture getting rid of the Pixel. There's a couple of issues there. One is it is the Google thing, right? And so I kind of need to be in that world. Also, it's Project Fi. Like when I travel internationally,
I just can't beat it.
It's awesome to have that. And I do travel internationally. In fact, I've got at least 3-4 counting. I'm going to Montreal. That's international. I mean, I've got 4 trips this year international. I would be stupid to not, you know, to drop Project Fi. I mean, that saves so much money.
Interesting. I'm curious to see how this goes for you. Great.
I think that's what I'm, you know, when I'm away.
So Paul,
it's a tough one.
You have to go to your meeting.
I do. I'm so excited about it, too.
You do. So you have to go to your meeting. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. You can find us almost everywhere. Paul, you're going to be in New York on the 2nd. We're going to be doing a meetup on the 1st.
Yeah.
At Rattle and Hum on Monday night. So that is 2 weeks from now? 3 weeks? 3 weeks from now? 3.5 weeks from now?
Yeah,
2 weeks from Monday. So
congrats next week. Thursday, I will actually be home.
Okay.
And if we can, we should do the podcast then.
Okay, Thursday, it will be Thursday. Perfect.
Yeah, because I'll be in Montreal through Monday. Then we're going to Stowe, Vermont for a couple of days. I'll be home Wednesday, midday.
Okay, good.
And then Friday, we go to Pennsylvania.
Oh, my gosh.
And all of this is in a car, by the way. It's all driving.
Oh, you're driving? Wow.
That's horrific.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry. Yeah. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. You can follow Paul on Twitter @TheRod. You can follow me @AndrewZarin, of course. We will see you all next Thursday. Take care.